Blog Talk Radio.
And now a brief message from our sponsor. Reality Books presents Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. The author is Marshall Washington Cabinus Abui, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, a message that will change America. Buy your copy today. $20 is all it costs, plus $5 postage and handling. To order your copy of the book written by the great-grandson of Booker T. Washington, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, send a text message. Include your full name and how many books you would like to purchase. Send to area code 706-399-5006. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A message that will change America. Send your text message, including your full name and how many books you would like to purchase, to area code 706-399-5006.
Yes, welcome to Life Success Radio. My name is Haleem, the Dream Builder, Doctor of Self-Esteem, and we're welcoming you to our weekly, three-day-a-week Life Success Radio program. So we go by, so we say, from the womb to the tomb, we hear your voices. Life Success Radio is creating our own future paradise to move us, especially our youth, out of the pastime paradigm of slavery in America and around the world. Today is Monday, November 27th, 2017. And before we begin, I'd like to open in prayer and ask you to join me if you will. I'll say it in Arabic and I'll say it in English. A'udhu billahi minash-shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Alhamdulillah, Hirabila Alameen, Ar-Rahman, Nirahim, Maliki Yawmiddin, Iyaka Na'budu wa Iyaka Nasta'in, Ihdina Siratal Mustaqim, Siratal Ladzina An'amta 'Alayhim, Ghayril Maghdubi 'Alayhim Waladolim. Amin. The translation from the Arabic, which I recited in English, is as follows. I or we seek refuge with God, Allah, away from the cursed devil, Satan. With the name Allah, God, most gracious, most merciful. Praise be to Allah, God, cherisher and sustainer of all the worlds, most gracious, most merciful, master of the day of judgment. Thee alone do we worship, and thy aid and guidance we seek. Show us the straight way, the way of those on whom thou hast bestowed thy grace, those whose portion of life achievement is not wrath, and who go not astray in their service to you. Amen. Amen. Let it be so. Again, I am your host and moderator, Haleem the Dream Builder, Doctor of Self-Esteem. And what we have here is our Life Success Radio is sponsored by Reality Books, publisher of the American classic Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. And the author is the senior great-grandson of Dr. Booker T. Washington. And I call him the professor. And so I'll say the professor, the author, is Marshall Washington Cavendish Abui. And so this is a book that I would recommend to everyone, not only for his historical footprint, but also his futuristic scope of vision into what was practiced behavior of Dr. Booker T. Washington and those that he was assisting at Tuskegee University in terms of planning and moving forward economically to a life of independence in America just shortly after the episodes of the slavery experience. Very important, very important. So today here on Life Success Radio, we're going to be talking on a subject that is like going to be a topic that will last a quarter, 3 months, and we have like three different days that we actually utilize, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And the time frames are, on the East Coast, the time frame will be 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and where I'm at here in Texas, it's 6 p.m. Central Standard Time, and for those in the West Coast, it is 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. So on the topics, though, for what we'll be addressing, will be under the theme shows. So the theme of Monday's show, which is today, is Senior Moments, Senior Moments. And the theme or the caption or title, slogan is True Life Wisdom Teachers, True Life Wisdom Teachers. And so on Tuesday, we actually have a program directed to young people, and the show itself is called Easy Generation, like E and then Z, Generation. And the slogan for that is smart minds making waves to the future. And then, of course, Wednesday show, we have it as the show itself is blessed to be blessed. And motto or the slogan is Miracle Warriors. Living the dream without excuse. And so in event for today, we have a topic that will be on family. Is it a bloodline or a conscious mind? Family, is it bloodline or conscious mind? Now, I guess I should also tell you for Tuesday's show, I'll just tell you that just for you, those of you who may want to call and participate, welcome to do so. For the topic for Tuesday show tomorrow is peer-to-peer leadership. Is it discipline compliance to present status, or is it forward-thinking action and spiritual ideals? And on Wednesday show, the subject topic will be solutions to psychological dependency and mental control of today's slave masters who use social media and religion to control our lives. So in terms of what today's show is, the family, is it bloodline or conscious mind? I want to give you my perspective. Now, I know family is crucial, critical, and mostly families do stick together. But occasionally, you'll find families sometimes might find different reasons to disagree with you and might get mad and hold a lifetime, a grudge against you for something that you didn't even do. And so we have to be really honest about things. You know, sometimes family can be a hindrance to you if you are, like, pursuing things that maybe they don't pursue and have no interest to, but in seeing you be successful, you know, how the haterade comes in effect, that's real. People sometimes, even family, don't want to see you succeed. Only because, you know, I don't know what the reason is, but a lot of times it's like selfishness in terms of seeing either the big brother or the big sister or the baby brother or the baby sister or in between those different ranges of seeing someone who has ability to make a change in their life. I know from personal experience myself, and a lot of times sometimes we come from, like, we have different, unfortunately, sometimes different fathers in our lives. Same mother, though, you know. So that definitely is a connection. My mother used to always tell me and tell up my brothers who we had, like, you know, unfortunately, different fathers. But she would always say, don't fight your brother. Don't fight your brother. She was always uniting that thought in our heads. Don't fight your brother. That's your brother. That's your brother. Now, that was really appreciative because my mother kept us together in that sense. But, you know, as she started going through a point where she was actually no longer, she was going through an episode of cancer, and she was actually on her way out dying, you know. And so she let me know that one of my brothers, which I didn't know that she felt this way, she says she couldn't trust him. And she was on her dying bed saying this. She says that he was very selfish. She had given him money to go to the store to buy some groceries, and he went and bought some drugs, and he never came back to the house. So she's bedridden, and so I come over as a visit, and then I get all this dropped on me, right? And so she let me know that he's untrustworthy, and so that was, you know, the last thought she conveyed to me about him. Now, I know what I experience now is kind of talking to the same thing, because not only him, but my baby brother demonstrated the same kind of thing. They were really street ready to the point that they were like, you know, like thugs-like, but, you know, I guess conservative thugs. They weren't really obvious with all the gold fang teeth and all the gold chain, slave chains around their necks. They were a little bit more conservative, but pants hanging off the butt a little bit, and not a gold, you know, gold teeth, fake teeth, grills as they call them. But still, they were kind of conniving. Now, so the story was that my grandfather had, you know, on his dying bed, before he was dying, he and my grandmother were living and in a house that he bought way, way back. And so the thing is that I was the only one taking care of the family, and because my brothers are all in jail, all in prison, all three of my brothers in prison. And so my grandfather, you know, had really very little choice, but I think, too, he knew that I was probably the most responsible since I had myself been a police officer, a professional baseball player, and some other things that I had done in the community to show that I had a concern for, you know, doing public things to help instead of doing things to hurt, like sell drugs and go and, you know, just you know, be in the streets fighting over women or just, you know, over the drugs or whatever the thing is. He knew that I wasn't that type of behavior. So he actually signed a house over to me, and fine, that's fine. Now, okay, so unfortunately my brothers got out of prison and they realized, whoa, the house belonged to us. Grandpa, you know, left with us. But the documentation, all that stuff, it indicated differently. But still, they connived to actually come against me in that sense. So I'm just really saying, a lot of times family is more than just bloodline. Right. So even though we had mother bloodline, we had different father DNA. But there's also the idea outside of your family bloodlines of any degree of connection, where that there's people that you might befriend coming up in elementary school or in high school or even in college or in life itself that will go out of their way to do things for you more than what your family would ever, ever, ever attempt to do. So that's why this particular subject of family, is it a bloodline or a conscious mind, becomes crystal clear to me, right? Now, I myself you know, I've had friends that I actually provided a lot of support for, and, you know, friends who were like leaders in terms of spiritual leaders in spiritual environments, i.e. church, mosque, synagogue, etc., that I had, you know, really put effort into to support them in ways that took me out of my, you know, I lost, well, let me say that I've given out so much money on that sense to people like this, and just to show that I cared and loved, and I still do it too. So, you know, we have to know that family is not always a bloodline, it's a conscious mind. And there's other examples that you might even yourself think of, like, you know, for example, I guess if you are playing sports, right, you find a lot of camaraderie in sports, and it kind of talks to the idea of building family relationships. You look at a lot of the professional sports teams, the idea of their best performance is the idea that they play as a family, as a unit, as a group that's synchronized out of the love and care of what they pride themselves in terms of being team players, right? So you look, you know, I guess you could say the Warriors, because right now I think they probably have the best example that I'm talking about. They actually play very unselfishly, and they're not a what you might say, a post-up team where they post up and feature one superstar. Well, they actually ebb and flow to the point that if you don't know how to ebb and flow in terms of your defense and working as a team, they will run you off the court, and that's a fact. I won't talk derogative about their championship game against the revenge that they had against the Cavaliers, but that was like a really interesting, almost like a one-sided game, because they heated up with a guy named Durant. They heated up with him, and, man, it's like, okay, who's going to beat him? That's the question. But I know somebody will if when they get their stuff together and they play like a family. Now, I say this to you. This week, about maybe 3 days ago, my sister passed. And so this was like a really testing period for me, actually before Thanksgiving. And so in her passing, I really had to reflect in how, you know, how much she loved me, knowing that we had different mothers, but we had the same father, right? So she actually, when I was on a vacation period, kind of isolated away from life, she and my baby brother, who's from my same mother and a different father, right, they actually found me and brought me back into life reality, because I had kind of stepped away from life reality on a timeout to assess my own self in terms of my spiritual consciousness, which I had kind of lost a bit. Times you'd be so, you know, hyperactive, involved in a lot of things to want to help society or, you know, help your family and stuff. And you sometimes overextend yourself and forget to pray and forget to realize that nothing happens without God's command, without God's hand on it. So that's a fact that you know, at least I learned, and I knew it before, but it's always good to get reminded, right? Get reminded. But here's the point, though. So my sister, when I was out there, she actually, you know, on her side of the family, she knew I was the oldest of the clan, and she complained to everybody in the family to a point of wanting to beat them up about her brother and me. She called me Junior, and in any event, so when she went out her way, her and my brother, my baby brother from my mother, with a different father, they kind of found each other and found me in San Francisco, and it was like for me a really extraordinary experience, because I tell you, at that point I had, you know, been out there for almost 4 years, homeless in San Francisco. Could you imagine that? I was homeless in San Francisco. about 30 miles away from where I lived in East Palo Alto, California, where I own a house that my grandfather had extended to me, which is worth about $3 million in the area where Facebook's corporate headquarters is. So, in any event, she actually raised such a stink that everybody at that point encouraged, encouraged her further to go make an effort. So she went and they found me. That's a unique situation. So, but, you know, when she passed recently, I really had to reflect on how much she really meant to me. And so it's like without her, I wouldn't have had a place to transition myself out of the streets, living on the streets in San Francisco for 4 years. I would have had no transition. So my deepest, deepest love, deepest prayers, and, I guess love vibrations will always be directed to her, right? Because she went out her way and gave me the chance to come back into my life. And so now I owe not only her, but I owe myself, I owe my family, my wife, my children, et cetera. I owe God more than anything because I know that it was his reality that brought me back. So under the idea, is family a bloodline or is it a conscious mind? I would say, that's an interesting one. Well, if I had to lean toward one or the other, I would say it's more of a conscious mind. Because even, you look at, I think it was a gentleman who was wanted to steal a birthright from his brother. So he kind of put some kind of hairy stuff on his arm so his father would touch his arm and think it was his brother and give him the rites of passage or blessings to be the leader of the clan. Now, I know the story, but I don't know the characters, but it just shows you, wow, same family. Jealousy is real. So I would advise all you young people and all you elders who understand that jealousy is nothing but division that's caused by the devil, and we call that devil Satan. You know, we have to realize that what we do, we're modeling whatever it is that we want our young people to be like, to be about. And when you yourself have a behavior that people can read by just looking at you, because people can look at you and see a snake walking. They can look at you and see a saint that's in growth and development, right? I know personally it's really hard for a person to hide that evil side of them, right? That's like the Dracula who actually on the full moon. Well, that's not the Dracula. I guess Dracula too. Wow. And you have the werewolf. Wow, so the Dracula full moon and the werewolf full moon, but what about Frankenstein? He don't need no full moon because he was made by Dr. Funkenstein. So Dr. Funkenstein, I know that that's really a little play on the word Einstein, but the point is this, that there was a monster in the idea that people can do today. They can create a monster in giving you different perspectives of yourself, right? Especially the social media that really frames young people in a way that causes them to emulate certain behavior of people that they think are leaders, but these people are really following the devil in terms of what is the fun life. Now, before we go, I want to say this here. This is a commercial break here. My name is Halima Dreambuilder, Doctor of Self-Esteem, and I am here as your host and moderator of Life Success Radio, which is sponsored by Reality Books, publisher of the American classic Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. Now, I say that, again, I say that that book is something that I treasure, and I really want to thank the publisher and the author of that book for certainly taking effort to make it available to help us in the world who don't understand the lineage and the legacy of Dr. Booker T. Washington, to have his senior great-grandson to take on this tremendous task to document the historical relevance of his great-grandfather. And not only that, but also the relevance of a lot of the leadership that had been around in that era, that a lot of us have no idea how difficult it was in the past times, in the, what you say, 1865, the year kind of befogs my mind for a moment here, but the point is this: it was like over 100 years ago for sure. So, but you have to realize that he took effort, and I'm saying to you, that's Professor, as I called him, the great senior great grandson Booker T. Washington. He actually took his time and effort and developed a really historical book, which is like a blueprint for America, that will help America to learn how to get better with everybody. Now, I'm going to say that's a connection to me as well, because, like I said, America right now needs to realize that we are family. And even though we come from, you know, different cultures ethnically, we still are human beings on this planet Earth. And here in America, in the United States of America, this country was birth of what is like the Pilgrims, how they came and the Indians helped the Pilgrims, but the Indians were here first, and then unfortunately the Pilgrims, they wanted to fight the Indians to take over their home. And again, that's not being family minded. You know, the Indians were like really humanitarian driven, showing love, and so we have to ask those people who are like the albinos, who actually, you know, have, you know, called themselves by different, you know, different names, like you know, like Russians and English, England, and French, and you know, all the other people who consider themselves white, basically Caucasian, white. You know, the idea is that the extremism of wanting to dominate people in America and the world really takes away from the family spirit, because we know that we all come from one creator, that's for sure, and we come from one model of human beings that some say Adam, right? And so Adam and Eve, and it didn't say Adam and Steve, so don't get it twisted by thinking that the relationships of the day with man being like another man's wife or another man's woman or another man's hoe to go out in the garden and do stupid things in the garden. I had to say that to just take away from any legal ramifications that might happen, but listen close. So Adam and Eve were the human being models that had evolved to the point they weren't like cave dweller people. Now, you know, historically, I think that we have to be honest that in the Caucasoid Mountains, that's where white people kind of like came out of, you know. And of course, in the Ice Age, they had, you know, the perfect nose to not get all the cold air in them, because their nose was really tight, and I guess they had other features in terms of the skin being pale, that it, you know, kind of like maybe kept them away from the wolves seeing them in the contrast of the white snow and stuff, right? But for sure, in terms of comparison to Africa, when, you know, they came out of the situation and they went over to Africa, they saw all these black people very uniquely happy and free. And so the difference in terms of what was their perception was that they can take advantage of these people, right? Because everybody else was like happy and free, And those coming from the caves, like, you know, poor and like desperate, right? So unfortunately, that happened. So they took an effort to go against what was, you know, God never intended for any people to enslave another people. That's a fact. But whatever happened, it happened, and we can't change that. But what we need to do, though, is today figure out how we can extend forgiveness across the board to black and white and other cultures, where that we have to forgive them for they know not what they do. And when we can do this as mature thinking adults, we will change the world. Because, you know, all it takes is just like for one person to say, let's stop this bull caca. Now, my grandfather used to tell me this. He says, I want you to know, he says that he grew up from Arizona. He said that there would always be one nice person in the group. He says, because as a young person, you know, white people would want to fight him in a group. And he said that there'll be one white person in the group that says, no, that ain't right. So he said there's always going to be one good one in the bunch. So don't, you know, ever think that all white people are bad and all black people are good. I'm going to say that again. All white people are not bad and all black people are not good. And for those different other cultures, same thing applies across the board. The goodness is that for those who understand is a service we do in serving the creator of the universe. Now, so we're all one family, but let me just stop and say this. This is Life Success Radio. My name is Halim Dream Builder, Dr. Self-Esteem, and I'm coming to you live from Houston, Texas. Got a little bit of moon growing up into almost a full moon, and I guess we're getting ready for this holiday Christmas. Wow, that's interesting. Okay, so Christmas is going to be a time of what should be, in the ideal sense, goodwill and fellowship to all your fellow men and women. But unfortunately, Christmas in this country has become about Santa Claus and the present that you're going to get for doing nothing but just saying, where's my present? So Santa Claus, in the idea of what Christmas was supposed to mean here in America, as something that has, say, the birth of Jesus, right? But you will never hear anything of Jesus from here up until December 25th of the morning. Then you have Bethlehem being, you know, songs and stuff talking about Bethlehem and the star and the three wise men and all those things, but never leading up to Christmas or December 25th will you hear anything about Jesus. And if you don't believe me, you could call me, reach me at my phone and tell me that I'm a lie or I told the truth, and give me a high five over the phone. My phone number is 650-921-5131, 650-921-5131. And I got an email as well as Dr. Dr. Sam, S-A-M, Well, W-E-L-L, at Gmail. And that'd be Dr. Sam Well at Gmail. I'd just like to see what your thinking is, because I know this, that Christmas is certainly a time where people, you know, should be celebratory, at least in terms of what is the end of the year, as we prepare for January, which is a new start, unthawing from the winter. So it's an unthawing from the winter cold months. And then the unthawing into January, it actually becomes for us a new period. And I'd like to suggest to you, instead of saying Happy New Year, follow me and say Prosperous New Year. Don't say Happy New Year, because happy is temporary. But prosperous and prosperity is a permanent thing that you work and build on. But happiness, wow, that could be fleeting. And people could be sad. And you say Happy New Year, you're forcing it. But if you say Prosperous New Year, that's an encouragement like we have with the Modern Day Achievers. When we say, instead of like saying hello as a greeting, we say heaven up. And instead of saying goodbye as a departure, because a departure is too, which you might say is too, goodbye is too permanent, and so long is not good enough. So we say forward to the future. Now you think about forward to the future in a departure, and you think about heaven up in a greeting. That means you are super, super motivating people to think higher than just themselves, because heaven up automatically makes you think about heaven. But I'm not talking heaven when you die. I'm talking about heaven here on earth. So heaven up to progress. Heaven up to change. Heaven up to reaching your goals of success. I'm not talking about when you're dead. I'm talking about right now. Because some people have fooled a lot of people to think that heaven is when you die. No? Well, take it from me. I was homeless for 4 years in San Francisco, and 4 years homeless in San Francisco is like being in hell. So for me, when I came out of that state through miraculous situations, I realized that it's heaven being alive. So that's how I came up with heaven up. And so the movement of heaven up is from me. And so you want to give any credit, give it to me, but don't worry about me, because I'm a always say heaven up, no matter where you see me. It's not 7-Up commercial either. This is heaven up real, right? So Life Success Radio, coming to you live here from Houston, Texas, and we have the shows scheduled for Tuesday and Wednesday. The shows would be under Tuesday's show, EZ Generation, and the slogan is Smart Minds, Making Waves to the Future. And on Wednesday, the show is called Blessed to be Blessed. And that is a slogan. It says the Miracle Warriors, Living the Dream Without Excuse. And so the topics for each of those days respectively, beginning with Tuesday and then Wednesday, the Tuesday show will be on the topic of peer-to-peer leadership. Is it discipline compliance to present status, or is it forward thinking, action, and spiritual ideals? And Wednesday show topic will be solutions to psychological dependency and mental control of today's slave masters who use social media and religion to control our lives, right? So we are definitely we have people scheduled for tomorrow. A gentleman from California, and another gentleman. I think I'm not sure where he's exactly from, but maybe San Francisco. But even from Texas to the West Coast, we have two persons who are going to speak, and we're actually scheduling more in now that we got this new format. And so just be aware, if you have interest to be interviewed by myself, please give me a call at 650-921-5131, 650-921-5131. And I want to say one other thing in relation to what I just explained about phone number. We have another phone number I want to give called, it's area code 641. 715-0700. The number again is 641-715-0700. And there's a PIN number of 294536 pound. The PIN number again is 294536 pound. Now this conference call comes on every Saturday at 1 o'clock Eastern Time, 12 noon Central, and 10 a.m. Pacific. The discussion is quite different, but it's very critically important, and we're talking about the ideas of how do we make gentrification work in the black neighborhoods. Now, some people might think oxymoron if I say gentrification, and you see all the community of color disappearing, but the idea is that gentrification is a good thing as long as we are knowing what to do to improve our neighborhoods. And that's what we should be focusing on, who are those people who are black and other minorities which I'll tell you this. I know that in the Spanish community, they don't have no problem of making the communities beautiful. They come from Mexico and different parts of South America, and they actually build their homes into nice, really nice, what you might say, mansions, right? Many mansions, but I may say many, many tiny mansions, but still high quality. And so they don't have the same problems as black people, unfortunately. I believe that black people, we think that slavery knocked all the wind out of us, right? And it may have knocked a lot of wind out of a lot of us, but not all of us. So what we are doing with the Saturday calls are talking about how do we make the best of gentrification in our benefit? How do we make the communities more vibrant than what they are now? How do we find a way to get rid of those old structures that we know are outdated, but still we fall victim to the idea of holding on to what you might say, holding on to relics that don't mean that no more. So we hold on to these old houses and termites take them over. We hold on the old houses and the mice, rats take them over. And so we have a problem hoarding everything. I understand why that one, because that's come from a slavery situation, you know. So we hoard everything, and we hoard it to the point that it just weighs us down. And so we have to figure a way to make our communities renewed, especially for our young people, so they can see that I don't mind being African American, I don't mind being black, you know, because you know, that's my ethnic culture. And when people look and compare me to other people, they're going to see my exterior skin as the first basis to determine how to associate with me or how to, you know, turn me away. But this brings me to another point I want to say, that we have to end racism and white supremacy and racism and black supremacy from this earth. One thing I know personally, and I thought about this quite deeply for a number of years, and I ask people the question, as I may share with you, that I have a cultural mix of Spanish, Irish, black, and Cherokee Indian, right? That's my cultural mix. And so I share with people my cultural mix, and then I ask them, what color is the true me? And a lot of times they're confused. They say, well, you what you said, black, or you this and that. I say, no, the true me, as I look at you, I look in your eyes, and I see the true you. And that is your soul. So what color is my soul? What color is your soul? They say rainbow. They say other kind of things. They say, well, I don't know. I don't black or whatever. I said, no. Our soul is like colorless. When you think about the atom molecules that the that God and the creator, God the creator, said, let there be light, or kun fi kun for those who speak Arabic, let there be light, and light particles became manifest in the universe. So that same atoms are what created us as a species of creatures and everything in the universe. So the idea today, we have to be very aware when we start talking about people because of color, we're really not being as factual, at least from a scientific perspective. Now, now there might be people who are like evil, right? And I'm not going to say that like people say, a lot of Caucasian people or albino people say that everything black is like really evil, like chocolate cake, devil's food cake, like Black Friday. Oh, that's new. That's recent here. Wow, that's a trip. Black Friday still going on. Well, why is it going to be Black Friday? Or, oh, I got it. So black for profit in terms of making money, but black for evil when it terms of dealing with people. So black is evil when you deal with black people, but black is like, wow, it's exciting when you deal with money. We got to change that somehow. I don't know. We'll figure that out. But in any event, I want to say that Saturday's call, we'll be talking with this subject of gentrification in our neighborhoods for the positive aspect of it, and you're welcome to join me, please. So I'm going to go back to what we were talking about the family, family bloodline. Family, is it a bloodline, or is it a conscious mind? And I say this, a lot of times you find that sometimes your worst enemy could be your family, and sometimes your best savior could be a stranger. All right. And, you know, it works not all the time accurately, but you just got to be able to make awareness for yourself. So don't prejudge everybody based on color, because I know, I'm going to have to say this here. What's the brother's name who found John Brown, who helped free blacks and had a shootout with his white brethren over slavery of black people? John Brown, good man, John Brown, stood up as a human being. It says no more treat these human beings as animals. They're not animals, they're human beings. Now, I'm going to bring it up to today, and please bear with me. President Trump, this is a message to you from me, Dr. Halim Mustafa. I got a prescription for you, sir. Why don't you start praying to God for your salvation? Because right now you are doing such a terrible job as the president of America. You make our President George Bush into a super genius. And that's not, you know, being disrespectful of you. It's just the fact that as a president, we expect you to have a higher level of tolerance, a higher level of intelligence. And right now you are playing with the social media, with your twittering back and forth like you're a little kid. Do you realize that little kids do that? Yeah, you don't need to get on Twitter and start twittering arguments about stuff that you want to try to influence policy on. Right? Well, maybe I got off track on that, but I had to say that. Though. That's on my record here. So the idea for family, is it a bloodline or a conscious mind? There's a vote that's out, and I'm going to say this to you. My vote is that, wow, I guess I'd like to have the family of the conscious mind, because that's going to be bigger than my family bloodline. That's me now. You might see differently, but I say this, that as long as we have a conscious mind toward one goal, one purpose, one faith, one God, we're bigger than just the family bloodline that we come from. So for me, the conscious mind builds up a bigger platform of uniting with people who feel just as good as I do about working for the creator, master of the universe. So please, let's come together, and let's come together in love for the spirit of humanity just because it's the right thing to do. Now, this brings me to a point of Dr. George Washington Carver. Way back at the time when he was at Tuskegee University helping helping Dr. Booker T. Washington with the Tuskegee campus early growth and development, he actually would help people with his scientific discoveries. And he actually done some things to help the black and white farmers be more prosperous in their growing of produce. He introduced crop rotation as one. He introduced, crop rotation had a double connection where it actually gave the ability to get the soil used to other plants that didn't take out as much nutrients as some of the other plants did. So he would, you know, put peanuts, legumes, and other kind of nitrate plants that would put more nitrate into the soil. And the cotton that was used that had it overgrown in the South caused the soil to be so depleted of the nutrients. And so Dr. Carver was given a federal holiday by America in 1945 by the 79th U.S. Congress under President Harry S. Truman. And so the law that is known as Public Law 290 was signed by President Truman that mandated all federal buildings fly flags half staff. And when I found out about this from California in, say, 1997, 98, I initiated a movement across the country to get this particular public law mainstream again, even though it had passed in 1945. There were only seven states that have officially had came on board with the proclamations or resolutions. I think resolutions, right. Proclamations, right. Okay, so any event, oxymoron for me. Okay, so the point is this, is that seven states were on board already, and I got California, Alabama, and then Missouri to come on board. And then I went to Indiana to the National Conference of State Legislatures annual meeting, and I actually spoke to representatives of the National Caucus of Black State Legislators and presented the resolution that they actually took to their executive committee meeting of the official body, the National Conference of State Legislatures, and Senator Mike Costa of California. They actually passed the unanimous resolution indicating that the remaining states, which is like 40, would be on board in a permanent sense. It was already a federal law, so no changes ever could have stopped it. But point is, it's symbolic that we had to do these things. And so we have a telethon that we're planning that's going to generate money to support community development in the neighborhoods that people who are being left behind will have a chance to catch up. So our goal, foundation that my family foundation, like Bill Gates has his own, and I'm sure Zuckerberg has his own foundation. I have my own foundation as well. And so the telethon for January 5, 2019 will be marketed all year beginning January 1, 2018. And for the 12-month cycle, we're doing all the media marketing to bring attention to this day for January 5, 2019, where we're launching a billion-dollar fundraising telethon where $50 million a year is being generated. And we'll put the money toward things that will help in terms of definitely K-12 education for those young people who are being left behind. And we're talking about STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. And we're talking also about families who are homeless who are left behind because of the economic conditions. So we want to bring some relief to those so that the families can start to, you know, reassemble again and get back, you know, their families. And we also want to deal with people who pass and don't have any monies to bury them, the family members, and the burden becomes really strong. So my commitment is to put together a charity fund as a part of the ALMS Yes Foundation so that we can extend charity to those families. And if they want to pay us back, that's fine. But we're not looking to do that in terms of just making it an annual thing. We actually are providing people with this money because money is not to be hoarded. It's to be shared, and it becomes a blood for the body, a lifeline for the general public who've been left behind, instead of using it as a tool to keep you locked into a certain status by giving you low wages and those kind of things. We want to actually utilize the kindness that we know people can do if they have the heart, even though, you know, they have a lot of money, they don't have hearts a lot of time, to want to share what is like the common sense courtesies of, you know, people needing some help without you having to ask. You should see it, you help them. That's what I do, and that's what I as a Muslim do, and I hope there's some good Christian brothers and some Buddhist brothers and sisters and some atheist brothers and sisters who do the same thing, you know. Share the wealth, share the knowledge, share the love, share the planet Earth, and let's live as one. That's what the goal is. Now, as we come to almost the end of this particular show, it's like 4 minutes until 6 minutes. So what I want to say is this. A while back, my daughter, who's no longer here, she brought to attention a song I wrote when I was like a police officer in East Palo Alto, California. And I wrote this song, and I forgot I had written it. And one day she was at home from San Diego studying for her physician assistant's test. And she told me, "Daddy, I remember this song you wrote." I said, "What is it?" And she started singing it. And I said, "Wow, I got it too now." So I remembered it again, and now I got it. So I want to say it to you. I won't sing it because my voice right now doesn't feel like singing. but I'll actually share with you in this simple presentation of English 101. Okay, here it goes. I tried to be a star, but I didn't get very far. I pretended to be a saint, but my friends told me, man, you ain't. After years of struggle and taking double, I finally came to realize I needed something more. I turned to God in the heavens. The Creator opened up the door. The first thing He did was to make me strong, and now I know that I belong on earth, so I can give a little more. That's why He opened up the door. It's peace on us if we believe that all together we can achieve. He made the earth. He made the sun. He made us all to grow as one. We got to save our children. We got to save our children. So tell the truth. Take your time to train your mind to see. I forget that. Take your time, train your mind. I forgot that part. Wow, I got to go back in my memory bank. But even here it goes. God is one. God is one. God is one. So at the next time, tomorrow, I'll talk to you. And again, this is Haleem, the Dream Builder, Dr. Self-Esteem, coming to you live from Live Success Radio, which is sponsored by Reality Books, publisher of the book Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. Until tomorrow, assalamu alaikum.
And now a brief message from our sponsor. Reality Books presents Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. The author is Marshall Washington Cabinus Abui, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, a message that will change America. Buy your copy today. $20 is all it costs, plus $5 postage and handling. To order your copy of the book written by the great-grandson of Booker T. Washington, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, send a text message. Include your full name and how many books you would like to purchase. Send to area code 706-399-5006. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A message that will change America. Send your text message, including your full name and how many books you would like to purchase, to area code 706-399-5006. Thank you. welcome again to Cab's Corner. This is Marshall Washington Cabinus Abui, also known as Cab. And I am also the author of the book Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. And tonight I would like to share some of the book with you. And this is the chapter entitled Transformation from the book Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, written by Marshall Washington Cabinus Abui, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington, the founder of Tuskegee Institute in Alabama, now known as Tuskegee University. Although Booker T. Washington had been producing a complete transformation in the lives of ex-slaves and their children at the Tuskegee Institute for two decades. The school was founded in 1881, July 4, 1881. Opposition from Southern whites to the revolution and the condition of African Americans was relentless. Opposition from Southern whites to the revolution and the condition of African Americans was relentless. In 1900, a leading Southern newspaper, the Montgomery Advertiser, published in Montgomery, Alabama, the cradle of the Confederacy, the first capital of the Confederate States of America, proclaimed in print, quote, "The undeniable truth is that the Negro is not fitted by nature of habits to perform successfully any work which requires skill, patience, or mental capacity. There is something lacking in their brain and in their body. Their minds cannot comprehend the intricacies of fine mechanical work, and their hands cannot be trained to accomplish it." Unquote. Putting the lie to that fallacious propaganda, Booker T. Washington explained in his book, The Future of the American Negro, that temptation for being industrious. We want to get a reputation for being highly skilled. And to his students, he said, get a reputation for being so skilled and so industrious that you will not leave a job until it is as near perfect as anyone can make it, unquote. Dr. Washington was convinced that it is not enough that the idea be inculcated that the colored people should get book learning. Along with it, they should be taught that book education and industrial education, the building of industries, must go hand in hand. No race which fails to do this can ever hope to succeed. Mental development alone will not give us what we want, but mental development tied to hand and heart training will be the salvation of the Negro. The transformation of the self-identity of African Americans was articulated in 1965 by Lerone Bennett in the book The Black Revolution. Quote, "Black people must have a new frame of reference which transcends the limitation of the white man's concepts. Conscious black students want knowledge and skills that are relevant to the experiences and the needs of their people. They are determined to provide a purpose for their education. Their desire is to develop professional and technical careers tailored to the needs of black people. The spirit of these young black revolutionaries of the 1960s, now a bygone era of hope and then disillusionment, was presaged by Booker T. Washington in his book, The Future of the American Negro. Booker T. Washington said, and I quote, get all the mental development that your time and your pocketbook will allow. The more, the better. Get all the mental development that your time and your pocketbook will allow. The more, the better. But the time has come when a larger, not all, we need professional men and women, but the time has come when a larger proportion of the educated colored men and women should give themselves to industrial or technical or business life. Just now, the need is not so much for the common carpenters, brick masons, farmers, and laundry women, as for industrial technology leaders who, in addition to their knowledge, can draw plans and make estimates, take contracts, along with those who understand the latest methods of truck gardening and the science underlying practical agriculture, those who understand machinery to the extent that they can operate steam and electric laundries, so that our women can hold on to the laundry work in the South that is so fast drifting into the hands of others in the large cities and towns. And the next chapter is entitled The Passion for Self-Help. The postbellum, meaning after the Civil War, situation in the American South required a massive reconstruction of its political, economic, social, and educational life. In the state of Alabama, which held the original capital of the Confederacy in Montgomery, a dire need existed for trained Negro common school teachers, according to Horace Mann Bond in his book, Negro Education in Alabama, quote, "There is no record of a school for Alabama Negro children prior to 1860. Indeed, the same legislature which enacted the school law of 1856 passed another statute entitled, quote, to prohibit the teaching of slaves to read and write, unquote. Professor Bond also observes, quote, in Alabama and other more southern states, the flame of intelligence in the mind of the slave was more effectively quenched, unquote. The half-century that followed the surrender of the secessionist southern states in 1865 produced an unparalleled challenge for educators who were concerned about the absorption of the former slaves into the American body politic, whereas the former masters of Negro slaves in America had previously supplied their human chattel with food, clothing, and shelter. The end of slavery released the slave masters from this responsibility. The newly freed Negroes were in dire need of education, but what they needed was practical training in the essentials of becoming self-sufficient. They needed to learn how to produce food, clothing, and homes for themselves, or at least produce incomes sufficient to purchase these things. Since employment opportunities other than working in the fields or in menial jobs were rare and hazardous, there was an unfulfilled need for African American ex-slaves to receive vocational and industrial education in order to support themselves and their dependents. New England-based Christian missionary organizations sought to bring the ex-slaves into their denominational folds by establishing seminaries and small colleges to train ministers and teachers. These educational enterprises, however, did not attempt to address the economic survival needs of the Southern African Americans. Dr. John Hope Franklin, in his book, From Slavery to Freedom, A History of Negro Americans, noted that when 19-year-old Booker T. Washington graduated from the Hampton Institute in Virginia, he was convinced that in order for the recently freed slaves to achieve success,
they must do some useful service that the world wanted. It became his mission in life to find the ways in which his people could be most productive and useful so that they would become increasingly valued as American citizens. Professor Franklin observed that Dr. W.E.B. Du Bois accused Washington of preaching a gospel of work and money to such an extent as apparently to almost completely overshadow the higher aims of life. In an essay entitled The Talented Tenth, Dr. Du Bois had criticized Booker T. Washington, writing, quote, "If we make money the object of man training or education, we shall develop money makers, but not necessarily men. If we make technical skills the object of education, we may possess artisans, but not in nature men. Men we shall have only as we make manhood the object of the work of the schools. Intelligence, broad sympathy, knowledge of the world that was and is, this is the curriculum of that higher education which must underlie true life." Booker T. Washington was able to develop a highly successful educational institution that stressed vocational, agricultural, and mechanical education for the recently freed Negro slaves. It is important to note that while stressing, the importance of vocational and technical training, Booker T. Washington did provide his students with the fundamentals of a liberal education. Although he sought to tie the principles learned from literature, philosophy, art, music, geography, astronomy, biology, zoology, botany, mathematics, chemistry, physics, etc., to the common occupations of life, his concern was that his students receive an education that had practical value. For example, he taught them to use the principles of physics, or he sought to use the principles of physics that were taught in the classrooms of the Tuskegee Institute to develop a steam energy power plant that would provide steam for the dormitories, classrooms, laboratories, workshops, offices, kitchens, and dining facilities. During the 34-year tenure of Booker T. Washington, the Tuskegee Normal and Industrial Institute operated an agricultural school on 2,345 acres of well-cultivated farm and forest land and trained thousands of Negroes in the mechanical trades by having them plan and construct homes and school buildings on the campus. In addition, Tuskegee Normal and Industrial Institute students also produced bricks that the school sold throughout the South, which were made from local iron-rich clay. Tuskegee students also manufactured wagons and buggies, furniture and mattresses, along with books, magazines, clothing, and shoes. In the latter part of his career as the head of the Tuskegee Institute, Booker T. Washington was befriended by the automobile manufacturer Henry Ford. Henry Ford had an automobile constructed for Booker T. Washington, which could have been the prototype for other thousands of other Ford motor cars to have been constructed by Tuskegee students and graduates, either in Tuskegee or in Detroit, where the Ford automobile factories were located. Ironically, Tuskegee abandoned its industrial technical education mission in 1965. Today, within 30 miles of Tuskegee University, previously known as the Tuskegee Institute, there is a giant Kia plant producing automobiles, which is owned by the Koreans, that could very easily have been the domain of Tuskegee University had the industrial education mission of the institution been preserved. And now a brief message from our sponsor. Reality Books presents Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. The author is Marshall Washington Cabinus Abui, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, a message that will change America. Buy your copy today. $20 is all it costs, plus $5 postage and handling. To order your copy of the book written by the great-grandson of Booker T. Washington, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, send a text message. Include your full name and how many books you would like to purchase. Send to area code 706-399-5006. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A message that will change America. Send your text message, including your full name and how many books you would like to purchase, to area code 706-399-5006.